Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. It is Wednesday, so that means it's time for our weekly house call with Dr. Lena Lee, Medical Officer of Health with the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit. Dr. Lee, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, thanks.
And also joining us today, someone who hasn't been on the air with us in a little while, Kim McCann, Senior Public Health Inspector, and we're going to be talking about winter and your health with you, Kim. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Always a pleasure. Well, we will start, Dr. Lee, as we do every week with you. Let's take a look at the latest numbers as far as COVID goes right now. We've been seeing numbers staying relatively flat. And as I look at the numbers again this week, it seems like we're sort of staying there.
Yeah, so our trends seem to be looking pretty good as far as the number of COVID-19 cases. We have 83 in our region over the past week. We haven't talked about the specific numbers in a while, right? So 83 is ballpark similar to what we had before our little bit of a spike in the earlier, just before the holidays. And so we're back to what I would call a stable number. The only caveat there is that our percent positivity is rising. And so what that probably represents is that we probably have higher numbers than this. It's just that fewer people are getting tested compared to, say, before the holidays. And so the numbers, though, I would say in total are stable for COVID-19. We do have 4 people who are currently hospitalized. And I think it's a good reminder to everyone that, as we know, COVID-19 can still be severe for a small subset of people, and the people who are hospitalized, unfortunately, are an example of that. In terms of non-COVID-19 numbers, we do know that flu continues to essentially not transmit significantly in our region anymore, so that continues to be a relief. However, we do have a number of other respiratory viruses that are circulating in our area, so RSV continues to circulate. And entero/rhinovirus. It's the same virus. It's called by 2 different names based on the symptoms that it causes. So the rhinovirus is the one that causes the respiratory symptoms, often like a cold. The enterovirus is the one that causes, sometimes called the stomach flu, unrelated to the flu, just a totally different virus. A casual name for it is the stomach flu, but it causes GI symptoms, so some diarrhea, some nausea, vomiting, cramping, stomach pain, a loss of appetite. So that usually happens fairly quickly over the course of a number of days and then goes away. But that we're definitely seeing circulate in our region as well.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, these outbreaks going down. These numbers are definitely going down. Also, want to mention there were no new fatalities added, and it's been a while since anyone's been in the ICU as well, which is encouraging too.
But
getting back to these outbreaks, 3 congregate care outbreaks right now, that's lower than it's been in a long time.
So we are seeing a smaller number of COVID-related institutional or congregate care outbreaks. Having said that, I would say, you know, it's still within the trend that we've been seeing in the past while. So I would not say that it's, for example, coming down, but it's more or less stable and has been stable for a while. And so that's quite reassuring. I think, you know, a real shout out to the people who are working in long-term care homes and retirement homes, because oftentimes the way that COVID-19 enters these settings is people who work there, people who live there and who've been offsite or had visitors, really it's been the vigilance and the good practice and also the care put in by everybody. So those who work there, those who live there, people who are visiting. I think, you know, so much has changed compared to before COVID-19 times in the way that people think about infection prevention in these settings, and it's really made a difference. And so a real kudos to everyone.
I couldn't agree more. Like I think of You know, I'm ill right now. I'm working from home, but when I had to go out, like even to the hospital, just to get checked out, wearing a mask, right? 5 years ago, I wouldn't have even owned a mask. And you know, and now I don't think, like when I'm in this type of condition, I don't think that I would even, it doesn't even cross my mind that I wouldn't have a mask with me to wear. And it's just really, it's really interesting that that's the way that things have happened, because it's just one of those things that will wind up being a benefit for us all, even if not everybody does it, but it'll be a benefit for us all as we move forward. And you know, there'll be a lower transmission rate regardless.
Yeah, that's absolutely the hope that we have. And you know, I've been thinking what a difference 3 years makes. We are definitely in a different place of understanding of viral transmission, and also a different place in terms of, you know, how we interact with each other, and what we know about risks and benefits of different things, such as, you know, what you said about masking, distancing, you know, the ability to have virtual visits, and importantly, things like, you know, washing your hands, cleaning surfaces, all those things that, you know, weren't necessarily in the common conversation 3 years past, but it's definitely part of the day-to-day. Everyone knows now, which is so wonderful. It warms my public health heart.
I'll bet. And it must also warm your heart to see that the World Health Organization has basically lifted your message and shared it with the world in recent days. And this is one of those things that I think really backs up this sort of global approach in a place like Canada, to be really close and really really in line with what the WHO is saying. They've basically said just the other day that COVID is still a problem. Most places are managing it. And, you know, we continue to see numbers go down, but we have to be vigilant. Boy, that message sounds familiar.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly it. So across the world, the situation is much more variable. So I would say in Canada, the US, a lot of Europe, you know, in high-income countries where we've had the privilege of having governments who that have acted really quickly, having the funding to buy vaccines, and also have the infrastructure in our countries, in our communities, to vaccinate so many people in a systematic way, that has made a really big difference in the risk of COVID-19 and how we approach it. And so, you know, in Canada, we are slowly returning to not focus so much on COVID-19, and focus so much more on other parts of our health, other parts of our lives, right? Which I think is really critical. In other parts of the world, it is variable. And so I think that's what the WHO is talking about when they say, like you said, we're at this transition point, or this point where a lot of the world is getting to where those high-income countries have been for a long time. And most critically, for example, in China, the transmission rate really, really was dramatic, but it appears to have peaked. And so those are really reassuring. And what we're looking at now is, you know, across the world, what does it look like to think about the longer term, rather than being able only to think of like a week ahead or two, or months ahead, but more years to decades ahead. Living with COVID-19, what does that look like? And I think the WHO is very much sort of on that spectrum with their recent announcement, and hopefully they will continue as the world sort of gets to the point that we've been at about treating COVID-19 as just one of those other respiratory viruses, that at that point the WHO will hopefully be able to declare the international emergency over, as we really fully understand what it means to normalize COVID-19 in the context of other respiratory viruses.
Okay, before we move on to Kim, was there anything else that you wanted to share with our listeners today, Dr. Lee?
Just a quick plug for, we've talked a lot about respiratory viruses, which are still very much on our mind. But as a reminder to listeners, we do have so many other vaccine preventable diseases. One thing that's been on my mind recently is that Alberta has declared an outbreak of pertussis, otherwise known as whooping cough. That is a disease that is preventable with vaccines. So we have small children who are most vulnerable, but that's the age at which pertussis vaccination happens as well. And so this is a plug and a reminder for everyone to make sure if you have small children at home or children who you know are not up to date with their vaccinations, please book a vaccine appointment either with your primary care clinic, or if you don't have one, then please contact us here at the Health Unit. We will help you with vaccination, and that's where you need the protocol.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Dr. Lee. And I know that you're going to stay with us as we bring Kim McCann, a senior public health inspector, into the conversation now. And also, Dr. Lee, we look forward to your update next week, and hopefully we continue along the same track here in Lanark, Leeds, and Granville. So, Kim, we wanted to talk about winter health, and we actually spoke with Dr. Lee a little bit about this, and it ignited a big debate, by the way, when it came to shoveling snow, because she likes to wait until it's all on the ground, which I think is just crazy. You know, I go out a couple of times throughout. So before we get into this, like, do you wait until it's all on the ground?
No way. I'm with you, Bob, on that one. It's too heavy. I don't want to strain my back, or, you know, I want to get the job done. So I'd rather go out and have an easy shovel a few times rather than leaving it to the end.
And look at
I'm
that.
I'm in the clear minority. My husband will be delighted to hear this.
Good. And we have it on tape. Okay. So I just had to clear that. By the way, Dr. Lee, I had several people who told me over the course of the week that they too wait until it's all on the ground. Yeah,
there's dozens of us, dozens.
I know. Something has to be done. But anyway, so Kim, we wanted to talk about all the snow and the extreme cold that we're now coming into, because so far this winter, we haven't seen too much of this cold. And really, like everything else, living in Canada, it doesn't matter if it's a heat wave or if it's days and days of rain. It's all about being prepared, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, it's been a long time since we've had, you know, three really significant snowstorms in just a matter of about 6 weeks. And now what do they call it? The polar vortex is coming in for the weekend. So we're going to get some really cold days, which, you know, it's good for the ski hills and the cross-country skiers. But you're right, these types of storms and, you know, cold weather can definitely bring in some thoughts where we need to remember that it can bring things like power outages. So it's good to be prepared for winter.
So what is the first thing that you suggest to be prepared?
So, you know, oftentimes the radio stations and the different weather stations, they give us lots of notice. So if we do have a significant storm coming in, be prepared. So, you know, be prepared for a power outage. Go out and get your groceries. Make sure your vehicles and extra gas cans are full of gas so that you are prepared. And don't forget that sometimes, you know, these major weather events, and we've seen it a couple of times where the 401's been shut down. So because of the snow and the drifting snow, and, you know, that can cause delays in things such as food and medications getting to the stores. It may even prevent us from, or, you know, disrupt the trips that we have to make to the store or to the gas station. So it's really important to be prepared and to have lots of food and to make sure your prescriptions are filled appropriately.
Absolutely. And I like that part of that first step is to make sure that you're listening to Lake 88 to get those important updates. Anything you'd like to add to that, Dr. Lee?
Really, I think Kim has covered the key points. I think the other thing is checking in on neighbors. We've talked about this on this show before, but really remembering the, so it might be neighbors that are down the street. It might be friends and family that are a little bit further out. The wonder of technology is we can do that sort of thing. And it also thinking of pets, right? So preparing pets for the cold weather, having a warm place for pets to be. I know some people still have, or some people have outdoor pets. So considering ways in which you can keep outdoor pets safe is also really important.
Excellent. Now, what else can residents do to prepare for an emergency? I guess, Kim, in this case, we're looking at sort of cold weather emergency, but a lot of these tips are some that we share throughout the year.
Yeah, for sure. And, having an emergency kit that can sustain your family, including your pets, like Dr. Lee had just mentioned, for a minimum of 72 hours is really important. And, in that emergency kit, you should include things like non-perishable food, so things that you may not have to actually cook, lots of bottled water, again, medication, first aid kit, some extra clothes. Flashlights, batteries, and even a radio. So if our power goes out, perhaps you have a battery operated radio that you can listen to the great stations like Lake 88 for information updates around power outages and what's just going on in our communities. And some other things, don't forget about those really important papers. Make sure that they're stored in a safe place because we may need them. Have an emergency plan. So, like Dr. Lee said, it's really great to have a buddy system, even amongst our own family. So, I may have to leave one portion of my house. My kids may have to leave another portion of my house. So, we have a designated place that we can meet, and maybe it's at a neighbor's home, or a certain portion. Part of our property. So it's always good to have a designated place where we can meet. And again, check on your neighbors, check on your friends, check on your family, especially those who may be in a little bit more of a vulnerable situation. So maybe you have elderly parents that don't drive necessarily. So you want to make sure that they're doing okay during an emergency as well.
All right, now let's get a little bit more specific. You mentioned the polar vortex, which is going to bring some very cold temperatures. And you know what? It's because we haven't seen them yet this winter. Like today's cold. There's been some days that, start to get down there. But even like when we hit like -8 or -9 right now, it feels really, really cold. But we're gonna go much lower than that, really soon. And because we're not used to it, I mean, that may bring some other risks. So what should residents know as we get set for this this blast into this deep freeze?
Yeah, I'm feeling a little unprepared myself. We've been kind of spoiled, throughout this winter with the warmer non-seasonal temperatures, but we are getting into the deep freeze of January. So we do have to remember that, extreme cold temperatures can freeze our skin and cause frostbite and frost nip really, really quickly. So, within 10 to 30 minutes, it can even cause hypothermia as well. And make sure that you're checking in again on the elderly, if you have children, if you have infants, all of those people really may need some special attention, making sure that they have, proper medications that they need. They're a little bit more susceptible to cold-related illnesses. So make sure that they're bundled up nicely and comfortable as well. And then avoid activities that can make you sweat. So again, going back to the shoveling, this is why I shovel. I don't like to sweat myself, so so I tend to do it in more frequent intervals, so I don't have to get all sweaty when I'm out shoveling. And then, of course, limit the use of alcohol. It can again make you more susceptible to cold-related illness.
Now, Dr. Lee, we know that Kim mentioned that, skin can freeze really, really quickly, but how quickly can the elements, like especially being in cold, affect your health in other ways, you know, if you're not prepared, if you're not dressed adequately?
Yeah, so I would say there's two general categories in which cold-related illnesses end up manifesting. So one is the direct cold, so that would be things like skin freezing or frostbite, as well as hypothermia. So the other is the way in which cold temperatures affect people, especially with pre-existing chronic illnesses for their lungs and their hearts. And so one thing to consider is that people with asthma may have additionally so more reactive airways in the cold. So that's one thing to consider. And cold can be a trigger for asthma attacks. And for people with cardiac conditions, there is a risk of worsening or exacerbating their cardiac condition. So that's one of the reasons, for example, Kim was talking about not sweating and shoveling snow and all of that, being careful, especially for people with cardiac conditions, being extra careful because, people with those pre-existing conditions, their hearts are already a little bit on the balance and not able to react so quickly to changes in the body, and the cold can be a significant physiological challenge. And that's the other reason, for example, that alcohol use can be a risk. One, because you may not realize your body is as cold as it is when you're drinking alcohol because of the altered mental state, but then also because alcohol is a vasodilator. And so you end up losing core heat because you're vasodilated. And then so you sort of lose that body heat out into the environment, and that can be a risk for health as well.
All right. Now, when we talk about going out into that environment, Kim, you have to be dressed well. You have to be dressed properly. There's no doubt about it. I can remember when I was about, I don't know, early 20s, and it just this light went off when I decided I don't need to look cool anymore outside in the winter, because I was like your typical teenage guy where a baseball cap was better than a toque. If anything, I didn't want to get toquehead, for crying out loud, you know, and I'd be wearing the same coat that I wore in the fall and all this. Let me tell you, when I got my first parka and my big first toque with a nice big pom-pom on it and big mitts and all that, walking around outside, it was a whole new world, I'll tell you. It really was.
I remember that very, very clearly myself.
There you
It
go.
really
We all
does
go
make
through it, eh?
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're dressed properly, you can be outside in those cold temperatures and, really enjoy the winter season. It's fabulous. But you're right, you do have to be dressed properly. So you want to make sure that you cover up, your head and your upper body to help keep the heat in. Of course, wear a hat and wear lots of layers of clothing so that, even on those really cool days, the sun can be warm. So you may want to take a layer off. So it's important to wear lots of layers. Make sure places like your nose or your ears or even your cheeks and your fingers, if you can get them covered up as well, because they're also, exposed skin. You could get frostbite on that exposed skin. And change into drier clothes as quickly as possible if you happen to get wet. So, carrying an extra pair of socks is not a bad idea, and some extra pair of boots. If your boots get wet, make sure that you can get home and get your boots changed as well. And avoid wearing really tight clothing or footwear because you don't want to impair your circulation. And again, bring along some extra clothes if you're going to be out for the day, just to have them just in case you need to, make sure you get warmer, or you can take a couple of layers off or change any wet clothes as you need to. And then if you can shelter yourself from the wind, oftentimes the wind will make us colder. So than not being in the wind. So, maybe behind a tree or in a garage or in a, behind an embankment of sorts.
You're nodding your head quite a bit there, Dr. Lee. Obviously, some good points made there by Kim.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it reflects the experience that all of us have had, being Canadians living in this environment. You sort of figure out very quickly, the especially dressing in layers, right? And layers. So if you have one thick layer versus the same thickness but two layers, you end up retaining more heat from sort of a physics point of view or a physical point of view. And so lots of layers is important. The other thing is really emphasizing, if you're getting cold or if the weather is really not your jam, so to speak, for that given day, don't hesitate to change your plans for the day, right? Like sometimes I've been in an experience where I've made plans for the day. I'm going to be out and about, and maybe I wasn't dressed appropriately. Or once, in a very unfortunate situation, I had a hole in my shoe that I didn't realize. And so, rather than sort of bearing it out through the day, and having that risk to your health, consider going back, changing your schedule. It may be a little bit of an inconvenience, but in terms of your health, that's really important.
Absolutely, couldn't agree with you more. Just a very quick story. We had a exchange student from New Zealand living with us when I was in high school, and he, during one of these classic Canadian winter snowstorms and so on, he was so excited. He got all bundled up from head to toe. My mother made sure that he was very well covered, and he went out into the snow because he had never experienced that before. And when he got back, he was telling us about how cool it was and all this to do this. So my brother and I each took turns getting completely bundled up and going out and experiencing the weather, because this was back in, when I'd be wearing the thin coat and, a baseball hat out there. So it was neat to experience the winter through somebody else's eyes. And it just, I remember that to this day, how comfortable I was and how interesting it was to be out in that storm, just observing and, obviously being safe because we were just around the corner from our house. So anyway, some great tips there, especially with the cold that is coming. Well, that's here, but it is going to get cooler, that's for sure. If anybody would like to get some more information about both emergency preparedness and, of course, prepping for extreme temperatures, where can they go, Kim?
We do have an emergency preparedness webpage on our website at healthunit.org that has lots of good information on just preparing for emergencies and also exposure to adverse temperatures. And the Red Cross and also Environment Canada are very good websites. There's lots of information there that people can check out.
Excellent. Well, Kim and Dr. Lee, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us again this week. It's very much appreciated. Dr. Lee, we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. I look
And
forward to it.
Kim, you're welcome back anytime. It was great to catch up with
Thank
you
you.
again.
Yeah, it was nice to see you. Thanks, Bob.
You're very welcome. Our guest today on In Focus, Kim McCann, Senior Public Health Inspector with the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit, and of course, Dr. Lena Lee, Medical Officer of Health for our health unit. I'm Bob Perreault. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful afternoon.